Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who, just before the show, spilt an entire cup of coffee over his desk in his computer and his watch and his phone. It's Richard Herring! Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging around with the guys from Skank for Girls the other day. Not the singer, the other two blokes. Good, they're good lads. You remember this? They got a slightly weird name. It's a nice, like, creepy name, isn't it? Slightly, if you listen to them again, slightly rapey songs. Slightly rapey. You wouldn't be able to scouting for girls. You wouldn't get away with that now in the 2010s, would you? Straight to prison. They're nice guys, though. They call it a rehellistopus. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I'll do that in the next one. That's all right. I should have used that one. I had a bit of routine about that. That would have been ace. So thank you for coming along. Oh, the show is, as you may know, sponsored by Beer 52. We may sample some of their beer. If you want 8 free craft beers, go to beer52.com/RHLSTP and you can get them for £2.95 pack. And posting. Should have said that in the intro. Before this intro. They're very nice. We're going to drink some. I might give some to the people in the front row later. That's the kind of guy I am. Get the party started. My book, Emergency Questions, is out, as you may know. The week this was recorded, Banksy painting, remember, was sold at auction, wasn't it? And then Banksy, he's a little scamp, and he set up... Without the auction house knowing, somehow, he decided... Even though, surely they'd look over all the stuff beforehand just to check it's genuine and stuff, and usually it's on a little podium, isn't it? But they put it on the wall for some reason. They were, oh, that's all right, you can put it on the wall, mate, your bank says. No, we won't look at the spikes, and it's fine. No, it's... They had no idea what was going to happen. No, the auctioneer pressed a button just at the end for some reason. No, they had no idea what was going to happen. But now, Banksy shook because he ripped it all up, then he shredded it all, and now that painting is worthless, except it's worth twice as much as it was worth. So that is that. He showed the bloke who bought that, didn't he? Or the woman who bought that. So I wondered if that was also true of my book, Emergency Questions.
This retails for $12.99. You can get a bit cheaper on Amazon and Go Faster Strike. But I wonder, I'm going to put this copy of the book on eBay after this show as a broadcast. I'm like, I'm a bit like Banksy. It seems a shame, doesn't it, to destroy something. Seems, I don't know, is this art? It seems rude to the people who made this book. Also, I've got to use this one with the guests, so it's... luckily, would you rather date a man who has a six-foot penis or a man who had a penis? That's still in there, so that's okay, we're still there. I'll gather up, though. Don't you art. You art collectors, don't get those. Look at that, that's going to be worth. So that'll go on eBay, Herring 1967, search for me on eBay. Let's see if we can get more than $12.99 for it. Or if it's in fact worth less, because some of the pages are slightly spoiled, you could stick them back together again, as you could with the Banksy. So that is my satire, that's my satire of the art world there. My daughters, weirdly, if you saw my show Over Again 50, which is out on DVD and download probably now, she's got quite obsessed with the black penguin from the penguin race game. She's been carrying it around with her all the time and insisting, like it was my son's birthday this weekend and lots of photos, and she held up the penguin in every photo. There's some really cute photos, and she held up the penguin had to be in every photo. But also she said the penguin was talking to her and was relaying questions from someone called Simon and that was telling her to do things. And she was going, what should I do, Simon? She was literally there. So I was luckily away this night because I don't think I could have slept in the house with this. Tell me what to do, Simon. Literally doing that. Okay, that's fine. So I'm hoping that's something to do with Simon Says and not with, you know, we've got a ghost baby in our house. If I find out that ghost baby, the baby and I died in a house called Simon, I'm leaving. I'm leaving my family behind. Fuck them. Happy birthday to my horrible son. Did a massive shit, diarrhea-y shit, and then just waved his legs around on his birthday. Thanks, mate. Love that. So we'll talk about the female Doctor Who next week. Sorry, there isn't time to do it in this one. So I would like to introduce our first guest, because I've been ripping up books. I've not got time. Could have done it in the time I've said we haven't got time. Our first guest, our only guest this week, is probably best known as Woman on Bench in Little Britain. That's why we're all here tonight. Though you may also know her as Mother on Bench from the next episode of Little Britain. She was in two episodes of Little Britain. I'm interested to find out how she characterised those women on bench and mother on bench differently. It's Alice Lowe, ladies and gentlemen! Alice Lowe. Welcome. Hello. Welcome to this mad podcast. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm good.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a cold, so I'm a bit husky.
Have you?
Sorry.
That's everyone. Okay, I hadn't noticed. I've got a bit of a snotty cold.
Have you?
Yeah,
we all have,
snotty.
Haven't we? We've all got... Hands up if you've got a virus. I know how you feel.
Genital warts? Yeah, no, probably. So, let's talk about Little Britain, first of all.
Yeah,
do you remember you were a woman on bench and mother on bench.
Did they really put me on a bench twice?
Yeah.
In two different sketches?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if maybe it was
weird.
The same sketch, but they also... Why were you called a woman on bench one week and mother on bench?
I think it's two different sketches.
Two different sketches,
two
different characters.
I think I was in both series.
Because you also were in Come Fly With Me, which is by the Little Britain guys, in playing a young mum. Were you on a bench?
No, I was on an airplane seat.
I was
obviously.
Sitting down.
They want me to sit down.
They do,
with
for some reason.
They know me as a sitting down actress. Yeah. Do you know what is absolutely true? I love sitting down.
Yeah.
I do. It's one of the appeals of doing a podcast. It's like, oh, do I get to sit down?
You do sit down if you want, unless you're Brian Blessed, and then you'll stand up a bit. I like it when you're acting and you know the whole scene sat down. That makes that such
or in
an
a
easy
bed.
Job.
Oh, my God, that's
or
my favourite scenes is when they go, you're in a bed, she's ill, or she's, like, asleep, and you're like, oh, my God, I'll get to just, like, be in pyjamas and lie in a bed. Yes. It's so funny being an actor because you just mainly complain about your lack of work until you get work, and then you're just like, when's my day off? When's my day off? When do I get to do... Oh, I'm in a bed in this scene. Brilliant, I get to lie down.
Yeah, unless I was once in a bed dressed as Captain Oates And this, don't this sketch ever got shown, and then and someone had to jiggle up and down on top of me having sex with me.
Oh.
Because the joke was Captain Oates kept on saying he was going, he was happy to leave, but then kept on coming back and going, but you know, I'm going to go now, I'll die out there, it's fine. So then there was a load of other sketches where he was having potatoes, they were eating potatoes, and someone said, can I have the last potato? And they go, yeah, it's fine. I mean, I've had no potatoes, but if you, you've had four, but if you want the last one, that's fine. And so he was having sex with the lady, and then she came and he didn't, hadn't again. It hasn't come.
Wow, what was this for?
It was for just my private collection.
Some obscure...
It was a long, protracted way of getting a woman to jiggle up and down on top of me.
Wow.
It was quite nice, but I was dressed as Captain Oates. That's my thing.
Why have you got a machine for card processing?
Just in case, you know, you feel like donating. It's an expensive. It's expensive to put these podcasts on.
Do I have to pay for one of these?
Yes.
You're going to charge me.
They're £3
each. I actually
each.
Do want.
Which one would you like a beer?
Card.
So it's this back, is beer 52. There. You can get these at home. I like the look of this one. It's okay. Called Zamajaska Pivarara. It's got a dragon on it. That's
that
quite scary.
Will do me.
There's
I'll
a
try
bottle
that
over
one.
There, so you can have that one.
Now watch me fail at this.
And this is a black IPA. Oh, yeah. Let's put ink in it, it's all right. And it's called Starvation, which is a really weird name for a beer. So I'm going to try that one. It will make you so hungry.
That's actually nice.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Well, they're crafty, these beers. That's what people have crafted these. I'm not sure.
Oh, no. Oh,
dear. It's pure evil. it's nice. So let's have a look at what I've got written down. Little Britain. Was it nice working with the Little Britain guys?
Yeah, I love working with them, actually. Right. They were always really nice to me in that way of, like, we know that you've got no money and that you're a failure. But, you know, we will throw you some crumbs and let you be mother on bench. Yeah. But no, they've always been great.
Okay.
I did need the money at the time as well. It was quite a lifeline, if I'm honest.
Like, you get 250 quid for doing
God.
This.
Yeah,
so
I know.
That's all right.
Payday.
Just in case you're worried.
But then you're going to charge me for the beer.
charge you to get out.
So I'll have to make some deductions.
I'm quite drunk now. We were drinking backstage as well. Or you
yeah,
haven't really
I'm
had
not
a drink
used
backstage.
To it. I don't drink
I don't know
really
if I can get
anymore.
Through the rest of the... So, well, there's lots to talk to you about. Last year saw Prevenge, which I loved. It's amazing, but it's a very... The story of that is quite incredible because you sort of came up with the idea while you were pregnant and did it while you were pregnant, and it's a very quick turnaround.
Yeah, it was. Long story short, basically, I wanted to make a film, but it was not happening for me. You know, it's famously very slow, the development process of films, especially in the UK. And I got pregnant because I just thought, well, you know, I can't hang around too long in those terms. You know, eggs are aging, my agent said to me. she didn't. She wouldn't say that. She'd be like, keep working, don't have a baby. But anyway, that's what, you know, basically I was like, oh shit, I'm going to have a baby and I'm not going to be able to direct anything or do anything and my career's probably over. And then I got approached by a production company who said, we've got a little bit of money to make a feature film. Have you got any ideas? And I came up with an idea for me to play a pregnant character, basically.
Yeah, who's sort of... I mean, it is what pregnancy is like. I've not been through pregnancy personally. But I've been around someone who's pregnant a couple of times.
She killed loads of people.
I think
it's a spoiler.
Came pretty close to killing me, the particular lady who I impregnated. And I'm not allowed to impregnate her again or get anywhere near doing anything involved with that in case... she's a guest on next week's show if you want to see her. And, you know, but it's such a... I mean, having kids is so bizarre. I know it happens all the time, but it just doesn't fit. It makes me think none of this is real. That's the little clue. That
you think we're living in a virtual reality?
Yeah, or the Truman Show or something. I think it's a video game. You know, it's going, oh, why don't we have them like a tiny human being springs out between their legs? Come on! That's insane. Who would come up with that? So in the film, your character is sort of possessed by the belief that her baby is telling
evil,
her to kill.
Yeah, telling her to
which
kill.
Which is really understandable as well. I mean, it feels like you've got this parasite.
I sort of had this dawning.
More so when they're out, to be honest. But it's when they're in there.
I had this dawning realisation when I was about 5 months pregnant and I was trying to do all the work that I could. I was just saying yes to everything. The crisp porn that you did.
Yes.
I said yes to that. No, but I was just taking all the jobs that I could find, and I was staying in some hotel somewhere, you know, how you are filming and wherever. And I just suddenly had this realization, like, I was like, oh, it's funny being by myself. And then I was like, I'm not alone. And I won't be for at least the rest of my life.
Yes.
all going to plan, you know. And that was quite a weird realization, actually. And then I was like, oh my God, that's quite bizarre. But I think comedians, we pussyfoot around having kids, don't we? Because we are children.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
So most of my friends have sort of put it off as long as possible because we're all absolutely terrified. And then people do it and they're like, I love it. I love it. Which I was like as well. I made this really horrible film about despair about giving birth and being a mother, and then I was like, I really like it, it's so cute and nice. And,
that's good. Well, I'm glad that you're not planning on going on a sort of murder spree together as in reality. But I mean, it was quite so. It's interesting that you were doing what you created a film and directed a film and starred in a film whilst 7 months pregnant,
yeah,
which seems insane because that you're getting to the point where, you know, people definitely just want to stay in bed, and you weren't just staying in bed for that particular film.
I didn't really have any choice. I'd sort of committed by that point. I kept seeing my friends and they kept saying, what are you doing? Are you going to put your feet up and stuff? And I was like, I'm making a film. And then I'd sort of go, I'm not, though. I'd sort of go, it's never going to happen, because I couldn't believe any producers would take that risk. I just didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of doing all the pre-production and a bit like, this is like funny because it's not going to happen. And then it did, and I made a film. It just happened.
You've been in fights, you've been punched in the face by Gemma Whelan's and killing the bloke from Murder in Successville.
Yeah, I wrote all of that for myself to do while heavily pregnant. Possibly not the best idea, but yeah, I mean, I kind of really enjoyed it, actually. Yeah. People think that the directing bit's going to be the hardest, and I was like, I really love the directing bit. I was really like, actually what was harder was like the stuff afterwards, like promoting the film and stuff. Yeah. That was...
Yeah, as you were giving birth.
With a child.
It's really good! Oh, God, it's really good! Ow! I noticed, like, I think you did... there's a lot of two-handed... it's sort of episodic with two-handers, isn't it? So that
I wrote it like that, intentionally, because I knew, like, you know, the biggest challenge. We shot it over about 11 days.
Right.
So I was like, right, if we have really long scenes, we can just get one actor in a day, which will be cheap. We don't have to keep getting them back in. And we'll do the whole scene with them, and then we'll, like, kill them in the morning and then do the dialogue stuff in the afternoon. Right. And that is kind of how it worked, actually.
But you sort of don't notice that straight away, but then it struck me, but it's artfully concealed.
Well, that was the way I had to write it, basically. So quite long scenes and stuff. And
and it's terrifying. But I think with both the Sight Seers, which is the previous film, one of your previous films, it's taken a sort of light, a subject that lots of people go, oh, that's fun. So camping. So we go, oh, camping's a sort of fun thing. But there's this dark, sinister undertone to being pregnant and going camping that you managed to bring out, I think. Because camping's a strange hobby, isn't it?
Yeah, I think someone needed... I think, you know, when you go on holiday to some weird place, there's always some weirdo, isn't there, that you meet and you go, oh, hello, hi. And then afterwards you go, I bet they're a serial killer. Like, do you know what I mean? And we've basically made a film about those people. and I sort of couldn't believe that someone hadn't done it yet. So we kind of were like, you know, we're going to be the people that make that movie.
Well, it's sort of like Mike Lee's decided to, you know, go a bit natural born killers or something.
Yeah,
like
well, that was kind of the pitch, basically. But I don't know. I mean, we had a real affection for those characters in that film. You know, it was part of our lives. We spent a long time developing it. So we had a kind of... There's something sort of sweet about the film as well, even though it's evil and really messed up. You know, it's sort of a rom-com, really.
They're sort of cheekily killing people with a little wink.
They don't mean it.
Accidentally, your partner accidentally kills someone and then he says it's an accident and then sort of smirks.
Yeah.
And then they're
underdog characters, you know. They're really underdog characters that you kind of go, right, this is a kind of... It's a very British film, you know, and these are kind of people that for whatever reason, they're the bottom of the pile. And it's kind of a bit of a wish fulfillment movie where they get to, you know, the nerdy anorak gets to bite back, yeah. basically. So,
did you go camping as a child? Because I'm a little bit older than you, but that was the family holiday was camping.
Totally. That was all we did was go camping. We didn't stay in anywhere.
Did you go abroad or did you camp in the
UK? Abroad, because my mum and dad are teachers.
Yeah, so am mine, yeah.
There you
go.
Did
you go to France? And
you go to France, but then my mum would make my dad like drive to Yugoslavia.
Oh, really?
Like literally. Wow. Like, my mum would go, so I've written a plan. You, Bill, are going to be driving us 1,000 miles across Europe. It's the cheap way to travel. And we would, like, because it was like a six-week holiday. And in those days, like, 6 weeks for teachers probably meant you actually got a six-week holiday rather than, like, you know, 2 days or whatever they get after they've done all their bureaucracy these days. But, like, we just, like, we'd have a trailer tent or a... So, like, hilarious experiences.
A trailer tent.
Yeah, it was fancy.
Yeah.
I once weed on my sister on the mattress because we had to share a mattress in the trailer tent, and I weed on her, apparently. Yeah. She's
on
never
purpose.
Let.
Partly.
I don't have that much bladder control. No. No, it just happened, but she's never forgotten it. Apparently, my parents didn't take it seriously enough.
Right.
They were very nice to me.
They should have made her wee on you, and then you saw this all. That's what I would do
just
as a parent.
Sport. It's a sort of European sport. You know, that's what they do in those countries.
My dad
it?
Was hilarious. We used to go to France every year, but my dad would try and speak French, it's terrible.
My dad's a bit like that.
Yeah.
As well.
Anyway, I remember him driving into a garage and saying, Catralita de petrol, so we play. Which, and then everyone laughed at him because, like, Catralita is nothing. So he's thinking 4 gallons. And it's 4 litres, it's like not even a gallon. So all the French people laughed at him.
We had this amazing experience where we went and camped in someone's orchard.
Right.
And this guy called Monsieur Le Ferrier or something came out and went, this is my farm, you cannot camp here. And then he just sort of took a liking to my mum and let her stay. But it was like the most sinister thing. And he had got this red setter. This is where Sightseers comes from, I'm just realising. He got this red setter dog, and I remember it was an orchard, so I threw a pear for this dog, and the dog ran for the pear, brought it back and knocked me over. And I just have this memory of just lying on the floor with this red setter standing over me. I must have been about 4 or 5.
Oh, my God.
That's my French holiday. Because in those days, you could just literally go and camp in someone's field. That was what you did.
We just went to a campsite, and I think we pretty much stayed in the campsite the whole time, you know. We must have gone and looked at things, but all I remember about those holidays is being in the campsite, playing pinball, eating chicken and chips in a basket. It was great.
Yeah.
I read SSGB when I was about 14 and ate big bars of white chocolate from France.
I remember there'd always be a Dutch family that would always be really good looking and really good at barbecues. They'd like be barbecuing in the rain. Like, the dad would be there in an anorak doing, it's just a little rain, I will cook a barbecue. And my dad would be going, jealous.
We must kill them. They were murdered by your
family. Yes.
I got off with a Dutch girl called Carla. It was great.
Wow. How old were you?
I was 43 years old. She was we were 14. We were both 14. It was charming. And when I say got off, you know, I kissed her for a bit.
And then
wondered if I could put my hand up her. I was like right on the last. It was right on the last night. We'd been, you know, getting on very well, but I had no self belief, and I'd fallen in the lake that day. So we were walking along, it was dark, and I misjudged her and fell in a lake. And then she kind of got me a towel, and we sort of sat down. And for ages, I mean, there's like minutes that were ticking away, and she was just looking at me. And she eventually just had to kiss me because I wasn't going to kiss her.
Aww.
And I thought maybe I could put my hand up her jumper.
That would have ruined it.
Yeah, no, I did it. Carla
might be out there.
And then we had to go back. And then she was right opposite. The tents were right opposite. It was like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. You see, I just used to sit with...
I've just remembered. I wrote her a letter. I wrote her a letter.
Romeo.
We became pen pals, and I wrote her a letter saying, you know, how much I loved her and how amazing this thing was. And I think, like, a little bit saucy, as saucy as a 40-year-old Rich Herring got, pretty damn saucy. And she wrote back to me, said, yeah, thank you for your letter. It arrived, and my dad insisted we read it in front of the whole family.
That's a
so we could all
story.
Test our English.
No.
Hi, Carla. She emailed me a few years ago. She found me on my blog and said,
"Oh, wow."
She's married with three kids. I mean, you know, she's like 50 as well. And then I emailed back. Actually, I emailed back. Said, "Oh, I wrote a blog about you," and then she never responded. So, hope you enjoyed the podcast, Carla. Hope you the English is going to. She was very. They're very good at English, aren't they? The Dutch,
yeah,
and French. Bang! Kiss French kissing. You went to Keswick Pencil Museum.
Yeah.
As your research for... Was it in the film of Sightseers?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
How can I have forgotten that? It's my favourite museum.
It's brilliant. It closed a bit because there was flooding.
All right.
And they had to close, but it's open again now.
Yeah.
And it's great.
They've got the world's second biggest pencil there. Which, for a pencil machine museum, isn't that great a claim, isn't it? Let's get the fucking biggest one. You can only get the second biggest one.
Who's got the biggest pencil?
I don't know. Just some bloke.
It's mine.
It's amazing that it's the most amazing museum in the world, the Keswick Pencil Museum. Yeah. Did you go there before the film?
Yeah. I think if you go to Keswick, you have to go there.
Yeah.
Because it's when it rains, it's the only thing to do that isn't walking around a lake. So it's like, you know, it's just like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
You go to the Pencil Museum, but it is brilliant.
Yeah, oh, it's amazing. And you go in... That's still the case. When I was in about 10, 12 years ago, the first exhibit is a man mining graphite, but his face is partly caved in. It's been kicked at some point, and they haven't bothered repairing it. It's the best. I just love going to museums that, you know, are in museums of museums.
Yeah.
They're so
I love those ones where they've got a mannequin and they light it up and there's a voice going, "I work in the mine." And and when you're a kid, it shits you up. I remember being really terrified. Like, I was like, "Oh my God, it's like witchcraft or something." But now you do go, "Why has no one changed this? There's like CGI exists in virtual reality and still these dusty mannequins in a mine."
Can only go so far with a pencil.
That's true.
They had, you know, they were, what was it that they'd been drawing? Something like Wallace and Gromit or something had been drawn with... No, the Snowman, I think, had been drawn with pencils.
That makes sense.
From the Pencil
Derwent.
Museum. So that was like, there was
pencils.
A lot of about the Snowman.
Yeah.
Very proud of that. I mean, just because you made the pencils, you didn't make the film. We talked about the Snowman. That was actually in... was that? Yeah, it was last week, wasn't it? So now I'm confused about which podcast I've done when. Right, we'll move on. We'll move on from the Pencil Museum. Is it your favourite museum, the Pencil Museum, or is there a museum that you preferred that you've been to?
I quite like Boscastle Witchcraft Museum.
Oh, yeah, that has come up before.
Yeah, although I do think I might have got cursed when I went there.
You got cursed?
Maybe.
And how did that take part?
Well, they make you look a lot of cursed objects.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. And then at the end, I sort of went to the gift shop and I said, "Is there anything that will remove a curse? Seeing as I've been round."
Yeah.
And they went, "No, really." They didn't even try and sell me anything.
You probably think of that. Yeah, that $25.99
yeah,
tiny
exactly.
doll.
They didn't really even try and sell me anything. And I was a bit like, "Oh, wow, I'm cursed now."
But no, you're cursed.
So you're just cursed.
We've got to go. We've got a baby ghost in my house. So I've got an old house and there's a ghost of a baby in there.
Really?
It's called Simon. And that's piecing it together. You ever seen a ghost?
I think I have.
Yeah. What?
What's one of my funny? It's,
got it off this piece of paper. It's one of my questions.
Well, it's coming up to Halloween, isn't it?
This is quite a good
so
way of
relevant.
Enjoying the book. Look, do you have a favourite towel? Just on its own. So yes. What was your? Do you have a favourite towel? Then we'll go back to the ghost. Which is your favourite?
It's this Orla Kylie one, which is a bit sad because she's sort of shut up shop now.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know. And now I can't get another one, and it's the only nice towel that I have, and it's all over.
I just use it forever. My favourite towel I've had for a long time, because it's a long time since Andre Vincent used it to wipe his arse on, and I've still got it, even after that. So, I mean, to clip dry his arse. He wasn't wiping his arse on. What was the ghost? When have you seen a ghost?
So, me and my friend used to have Halloween parties at this pub called the Prospect of Whitby. I don't know if you've ever been there in Wapping.
Was this a ghost or was it someone dressed up as a ghost for Halloween?
No.
Okay, let's go.
So I had a whole Halloween party. It was the night that I met my partner, actually.
Wow.
And
he a ghost?
That's the twist. He's a ghost. I've got a ghost baby too. No. So yeah, I cleared up. I went back to the pub to clear up all of our stuff. And a member of staff kind of went past me on the stairs. And I sort of was like, I knew people lived, the staff lived up there. And I was like, could I? And I saw like this foot, like it was almost like a Michael Jackson's foot, in the sense that it had a little black shoe and a little white stocking.
And it was going backwards.
No, it wasn't moonwalking. Okay. It was just running up the stairs.
Right.
And I looked up the stairs and there was no one there. And I felt like they were mocking me. I felt like it was something that had been playing a trick on me.
Yeah, for Halloween.
And I, but it was the day after Halloween. And I came downstairs and I was a bit freaked out. And the staff went, "Are you all right?" And I was like, I think I just saw a ghost. And they went, "Was it on the stairs?" And they went, "Oh, we'll get the manager. He'll come and tell you all about it." And then it was haunted. It was a haunted pub.
Wow, so that was like a medieval shoe or something.
Well, many years later, I read this thing about this. There was a pickpocket called Cut Purse Moll. Is true.
Okay.
This is true. This is many years later. Who was a pickpocket who used to hang out there. She dressed in men's clothes and she used to wear like stockings with ribbons around the top.
Right.
And I think it was her.
Was she just a foot?
Yeah, she was a hopping foot.
Wow, it could be. Did she steal anything from you?
Yeah, a plastic bag.
Right.
A plastic bag. I was trying to put stuff in a plastic bag and it just disappeared. And when I talked to the manager, he went, "That happens to me all the time. She hides stuff in the ladies' toilets."
Wow, I want to go
to
this.
He didn't say she. He just said the ghost.
The ghost.
But it was me that decided it was a she.
Yeah. Do you think you are mentally ill?
Yes.
Yes. That's good. And
I still don't know if I believe, but that's my good ghost story.
That's pretty good. That's about the best we've had, I have to say, in reality. There's been a couple of spooky ones. What do you think? Do you think there's ghosts? Andy McH, do you think that's true?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Andy McH.
You can go there now
Andy
and check it out.
Andy McH says it's true. Yeah, I'm going to go. Good. Well, I'll ask you this, guy. I came up with a new emergency question, and you know, we might talk about time hopping and time travelling in a bit anyway, but I was walking my dog the other day and had my little torch, and I thought, I bet if I went back to Middle Ages times with this little torch, I could become king of the Middle Ages. They wouldn't believe
until
the battery ran out. But that'd be long enough for me to get my power going.
Yeah.
What do you think is the lamest modern day item you could take back to the Middle Ages and then it would lead to you becoming king of the Middle Ages?
The lamest item.
Yeah, well, just like the most pathetic thing you could take from the modern world that would impress stupid people from the Middle Ages.
I was going to say a tampon.
A tampon
but
would be good.
Actually, that's quite good. But it's one use only. And then they'd go, "Now your powers are gone." And
yeah, I don't know if they would be that
disgusting.
I don't think they'd be that impressed with that. But like, if you had, if you had some like a mobile phone, or you know, if you had a gun, then you'd be king straight away. But would they be impressed by?
Maybe just like one of those boards, you know, that like, because my daughter's got one where you like scratch a thing and then you wipe it out.
Yeah.
Because that would never run out.
Yeah.
And people would be like, "Oh my God, she's a witch. She can write runes that then disappear." And
or a zipped cardigan. And then every time they were being bad, you go, and they go, no, don't unzip the magic zip. It's just an excuse.
Just
to
a photo. Like, if you had one of those masks of, like, a celebrity.
Yeah.
She took that. Yeah. They'd be fucking freaked out, wouldn't they? They'd be like, you're that person. Now you're not.
They're idiots. They're idiots. I hate the people of the Middle Ages. I wish I was their king. I mean, you'd have a time machine, presumably, as well, but that could impress them. But not as much. Good. I'll ask you an emergency question, just because, you know, they're fun, and someone's wrecked this. I mean, that is not a fun. That's not good, is it?
What, that? Is that your emergency question?
It's all been ripped up.
Oh, dear.
It's hard. Okay, if you had to wear somebody's guts for garters, if you had to, then who would you disembowel to facilitate your socks staying up? Good question for Alice Lowe.
I don't think I can give a real answer.
You can.
Because, like Donald Trump or someone like that. That's the obvious answer. Yeah. But the first answer that came to mind was Daniel Day-Lewis.
Really?
Because... because there's that bit in... Gangs of America, where he goes, "I will festoon my bedroom with your garters or something, with your guts." I'm so misquoting him, but he says something about festooning something with someone's guts.
Yeah. So you would wear.
And also, he's retired, so that from acting, which is just annoying, isn't it?
Do you think if you travel back in time with Daniel Day-Lewis's guts as garters, that you would become king of the Middle Ages? I don't think so.
No,
they can do that in the past. How efficient in guts?
They
would be
impressed at all.
I mean, you know, how efficient are guts as garters? Why is that even a phrase?
Probably really good.
Yeah, good, because they snap to them.
Because you didn't have elastic back in those days. So no. You had to use intestines and various body parts.
Probably does come from something like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You were thanked on the Paddington 2 film, which I love, for help on the screenplay. Which bit did you write?
I didn't write none of it. I tell you what it is. It's like... it's like a writer's room and you go in. I'm credited on both Paddington films and I will claim two bits of... Okay. So in the first one, I said that the train should be in Mr. Gruber's shop.
Okay.
And it is in Mr. Gruber's shop.
That's very important.
It used to be in the Browns' household.
Right.
What a ridiculous idea, I said. Now it is in Mr. Gruber's shop. And I also, in the second one, said that they should keep the barbershop scene.
Okay.
That was going to go.
Okay.
That had gone. Right. It had gone. The version that I watched had gone. I don't even know if I'm allowed to talk about this. It's too late. They were going to get rid of the really funny thing where he's got all the clippers and clippers Tom Conti, and they'd got rid of it already. And Paul King was like, I can just show you the scene that we shot, spent ages shooting, and we're not going to use it. And I was like, you've got to use this. It's bloody brilliant. And they did.
Right.
So I like to take credit for... Yeah. The whole film.
Yeah, that's good.
And
telling them to put something back in that they'd written.
Yeah,
that's good. It's like
this is good. That's my skill.
Yeah, that's good. Do you do a lot of writers' rooms? I've did a writers' room, and it's kind of an odd experience, but it's kind of fun to meet
like
people.
Yeah. I kind of. It's very tiring. It's surprisingly tiring. So basically, a writers' room is quite an American sort of concept, isn't it? Which they're bringing here. of late, where you just go and sit in a room and talk about the script, and they use. It's kind of like doing a poll, isn't it? A straw poll of like, this idea's shit and this bit's good. And like, you just chat about stuff and I quite like it.
Yeah. I think you come up with a lot of stuff that's good, that's no good for the thing you're doing. You end up telling loads of stories from your lives and then you come up with a stupid pitch for something else. So on the one I did, we came up with a pitch for something. It might be a little, I don't think it's quite like your film. It's a bit like what we were just talking about, but it was called Horny Time Traveller. In which just someone travels.
Was it a Dutch girl?
Was
there jumpers involved?
It was just someone who'd invented time travel, used it to try and go back and have sex with historical figures.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Just horny time traveler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anne Boleyn
next. Brilliant idea. Yeah,
Would you be in it?
Yes.
who would you like to play?
I don't know. Any of the good ones.
If you were the horny time traveller, where would be your first port of call to have sex with an historical figure?
Oh, now, I do know. I reckon Jesus.
Jesus? You reckon
my
you could...
My type.
Do you reckon you could seduce him?
Yeah.
He's quite religious.
What with modern contouring?
Yeah, if you went back with a tampon.
Yeah, with a tampon and some contouring makeup.
A potato. Jesus never saw a potato. If you took a potato to Jesus.
Mascara. I bet he'd never seen mascara. And I would have that up my sleeve as a weapon. And probably teeth. I've got teeth, which a lot of people might not have had. I think I would stand a good chance.
That's good.
It's kind of my type.
Yeah, Jesus, I think with Jesus, you have to start. You'd have to start by washing his feet with your hair. He was into that. That's what he liked. He's into that.
I've got no problem with that.
Yeah, you start with that, and then I think you just work your way up. I think that's how it works. He's not a fool. Go, yeah, we'll just wash feet with my hair. Oh, while you're down there, Mary Magdalene.
It's a metaphor, really. It is. Washing someone's feet.
It's a good choice, Jesus. I might choose Jesus as well.
You can't. He's mine.
You could do a little.
I'm going to take Jesus.
We could share him.
You can have Mary.
I could come in from behind.
I think Mary's a bit more of an easy lay.
No. She wasn't really a prostitute. That's a mistranslation and an attempt by misogyny, but also because she was quite high up in the early Christian church, and so it's an attempt, as with Jesus' brothers as well, who had different factions of the Christian church. It was an attempt by the the church that succeeded, you know, many people would say probably not the St. Paul. What did he have to do with it? Nothing, stupid cunt. Mary Magdalene was right there. You weren't just walking along going, oh, can't see anything for a bit. It's just showing off, isn't it, St. Paul? Up on your biblical criticism. I think that's it. I've got an idea for a film which is a bit like Prevenge, but it's afterwards, which is you have a baby and then, like, maybe you've been the woman's had this weird experience where she's thought she's been kidnapped by aliens and then 9 months later has a baby and then very quickly the baby starts to talk. And
look who's talking. Well,
it's more of a religious vibe, so it becomes clear that and it has magic powers and is an alien child. And would it be good or evil? How would you tell? As a mother, you would assume good, but, you know, that's Jesus was. If you read the apocryphal gospels, Jesus was, as a child, was like turning all his friends into pigs and stuff when they annoyed him and stuff. And that's what, if you were an all-powerful child, you would do terrible, naughty things, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And so I think that might be quite good. And then, is he good or is he evil? Is he Jesus or is he an evil force? Because yeah. The mother would think Jesus. I would think Jesus. I think my kids might be Jesus. I know for a fact my wife is a virgin. So that's my idea. You can have that.
I'll stick that
on the old roster.
Post-bench.
Yeah. let's talk about Garth Marenghi, because this was... Which won the Perrier Award? It might not have been. Yeah. Was it the Perrier Award still then, or was it the Comedy Award?
Yeah, no, it was the Perrier Award. We were one of the sort of last of the Perriers. Yeah,
you destroyed it. That was the moment Perrier went, no, we're not back.
Yeah.
He was too good for this. That you very rarely get mentioned in the list of the women who've won the Perrier Award.
No, not even on the day of winning,
really?
Actually. I think it was The Observer or something said, yet again, no female nominees. Under a picture of me holding the award, like, which was quite weird. But I do think it was because Matt and Richard didn't want to hold the award.
Right.
They thought that would make them look stupid, so they were happy for me to do it. So I think it was a bit by default. But yeah, it was weird. I mean, it was a sort of a gang show, so, yeah. You know, it's... Now, you know, Edinburgh's got loads of... I really feel like when I was doing Edinburgh, there was no women there. There was no women. There was like Jenny Eclair.
Yeah.
And there was like Catherine Tate, but she was in someone else. She was in Lee Mack's show.
That's right, yeah.
She didn't have her own show. She was like supporting Lee Mack. And that was what I was kind of really doing, was supporting Matt and Richard, I guess. And
I don't know if that's fair, but if you like.
Thanks.
I saw the show. It's a really excellent show. And it was a really excellent TV series as well. But I think it was one of those TV series that didn't really take off in terms of, you know, you think this is going to be a cult smash immediately. Maybe it's a cult smash, but you think this is going to be a big hit.
Well, for me, it was pretty astounding just to be in a TV show.
Yeah,
I didn't think that was going to happen to me at all, especially at that time in my life. I thought I was going to be doing like devised theatre, you know, and suddenly I was doing a TV show. So that was just a reward in itself. But,
It was a lot of work in the show and a fantastic cast of people and behind the scenes as well. All people who would go on to be very successful.
I think basically it's had a life of its own. I think it's quite good. It's sort of created its own legend in that it got cancelled, which was sort of the joke of the show, that it was the show that got cancelled and then we did get cancelled. But no, I mean, people still speak really fondly of that show. And it's funny because it's like it hit a point where people had just started using YouTube, not for the purpose to which it was designed. So people were ripping clips off Dark Place and putting them on YouTube. And before you knew it, like, it became a bit of a student thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, students were getting into it and watching them over and over again.
Right.
And I went to like a 10-year... you know, anniversary in Manchester, and it was all students came to see it. And that was really weird because I was like, what? You weren't hardly born, were you? this is weird. But yeah, I mean, I think it stood us all in good stead. I think, you know, it's one of those shows that it stuck to the principles by which it was forged. Live by the sword, die by the sword or something. And I think all of us have gone on to kind of not compromise with what it is we do.
Yeah.
So maybe that was just...
But you think it's a bit ahead of its time? It feels like other things came after that were... similar.
I think a lot of American stuff has been influenced by it. Yeah. I know for a fact, like people like Paul Rudd, it's his favourite comedy.
Right.
And, yeah, and so I think like it's got handed around in LA and stuff. I know, I've met people in LA who've been like, oh my God, it's Dr. Liz Asher. I'm like, what? This is weird. But you know, it's sort of got handed around. So I think other things. But you know what? A pastiche satire show is always going to be difficult.
I guess it was difficult. It was a difficult because the stage show was about a horror writer overblown, full of himself. And then, so the TV show was quite different than what you were doing on stage. Or was,
yeah,
so,
it was. It was a bit of there was another pilot before that was completely different. So right. I think there was a bit of, you know, Matt and Richard had to do a bit of finding their way of how it's going to work on TV. And I always loved pastiche shows like Naked Gun and Acorn Antiques and stuff. It's all the same sort of thing, like bad, you know, people making bad choices about what they're doing creatively. And it's so fun to do as an actor to just like, go act this really badly. You're like, I think I can do that. Yes. No, it's such fun. And I don't know, I'm kind of proud of it. I think, I don't have any regrets about it. I sort of have, you know, it would have been nice to not be in such a wilderness for so many years where I wasn't earning any money. For a while, but you know, I don't know, it's all a learning curve. I learned a lot from doing that.
You have, you know, you look at your IMDb, which I always do, that's my research, and you've been in lots and lots of shows, often like one part in a show, but that's still really impressive. You did a lot with Harry and Paul. That was a bit more recently, I suppose.
I've worked with brilliant people. I just wish I'd been paid more money for all of those things. Sometimes I literally go, "What? God, I get paid I literally get paid a bean, like an like Jack in the Beanstalk, like a handful of beans." Because I've got like something like 70 something credits, and I've got more coming. Like I've just shot a whole bunch of stuff this summer, and I do go, "Bloody hell, I look like a right old hack." You know, like when you sort of investigate an old Hollywood actress or something, and you're like, oh my God, she was in 215 things, but no one knew her name. And I'm sort of like, shit, that's me. Like, I've been in everything.
I look at you and I think that you're making really good choices and you're doing stuff that you think is great. That's the way I view you. And obviously people like do have to work and earn some money, but I don't look, even those things, I don't look at any of those things on IMDb and go, that's a hack choice. None of them are hack things.
Oh, that's good.
But the thing I really admire about you is you just seem to get on with doing stuff. So you formed a company and made short films, and you just made 12 short films in the first year or something like that. Is that right? And so like lots of people sit back and go, I could write a film, someone gave me the money, but it's like you just sort of have got on with it.
I had a dawning realisation that the stuff I do is always better when I'm in charge, basically. Yeah. And the more in charge I am, the better the stuff is. And not, that sounds really arrogant, but I think some people, they really, you know, I just felt like a lot of the stuff that I was writing was getting lost in translation, basically, that I'd come up with an idea and people would tell me to change it, or they wouldn't quite understand it, or they wouldn't know what it was.
Well,
and
people were saying Sightseers was too dark, like for TV and stuff. But that's the whole point of it.
Yeah, exactly. But I've had that my whole career. Yeah. I still get it now. Like people going, "But what is it? What is it?" Or, you know, "Is it funny enough? Is it too dark? Is it dark enough? Is it about enough women? Are there enough women in it?" You know, and I still get that now. And I just realise that when I just go, "Rah!" and just do it myself, it's better.
Yeah,
and people understand what I'm trying to say. Then,
yeah, but then you're a creative person. That is true. And you know, I look at the things that I've kind of given control away for, and you kind of go, "Yeah, why did I do that? I should have just," because you know what it is. And I think TV is a difficult thing to. That's why I think the short film community is very interesting, I think, and there's lots of people doing lots of kind of out there short films and exciting short films and longer films as well. But you've been involved. We both did a film called Mosquito, which we didn't have a
that was great.
We didn't have a scene together in, but were both in which I played a man who goes to prostitutes. I'm always ready for that. If you've got a film about a man who goes to prostitutes, this is the guy, and you played the wife of the man who becomes accident. Well, it's a very complicated film, but
it's a really good film, though. It's really funny. Yeah. It's really well done.
But you know, there's all these people out there, and there's all these little short film nights, and all these exciting directors doing stuff that they get the chance to be autonomous, I suppose, and create their stuff. Which I think with TV, It's just
you've got to fit a genre with TV. Yeah. You've got to really fit a genre, and like,
well, who's looking for that kind of stuff as well? Who's looking for something? People are looking for, you know, aren't even looking for scripted stuff that much. But it seems they're almost looking to drama people to create comedy on TV now, and they let them run with it, and it's they produce good stuff. But
yeah,
they seem reluctant with comedians to let them get on with it.
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of interest for drama now.
Yeah,
but what's quite interesting is I'll come up with something, and they sort of go, "We love Prevenge, how daring it was, and how crazy it is, and all these crazy weird things that happen." And then I give them something that's like that, and they go, "Oh my god!" And they're terrified of it. They're absolutely terrified. They're like, "Who's going to put this?" Because, you know, I like to mix funny with dark. It's this thing of like this fallacy of like, things are either completely serious or completely funny, and you're like, well, life isn't like that, is it? It's a mixture of everything. And and I'll give them something that's like that, and they'll be like and they don't quite know what to do with it. So I think probably, you know, I'm sort of dabbling in TV.
Yeah,
if someone wants to give me money to make something, I will make it, but at the moment I'm really enjoying film because I just get to do what I want a bit more.
Yeah. But I think that's the problem. If you want to get creative people to do stuff, then let them do it. I think that's where you'll get some misses, but you get misses anyway, and that's what they did in the past. They just said, oh, we like you, go and do the thing you do. And it's like, the last time I went in for a meeting, you know, I've been working as a writer for 30 years, and, you know, some 30-year-old man was telling me the stuff I was writing was hack, and you go, no, it's not, you know, comedically hack. And I go, no, it isn't, mate. You haven't got what I'm trying to do there. And, you know, you get advice from people about how to be a writer.
Yeah.
That seems arrogant to me, and that's, you know, I wouldn't...
We're getting really like into the specifics of the industry now. Yeah. I think we're just moaning about it.
I think it's important for the industry because it's interesting because that's the stuff that turns out to be good is the stuff where people have
where
been
people
left to go
had their own yeah when they had more yeah I'm all for that yeah. definitely just let me get on with it but it's so rare. I mean that's what with the Prevenge producers, they just let me do what I want really.
Yeah.
and they sort of go, this is great. Let's film it. And I'm like, really? You don't think I should like rewrite it loads and loads and loads of times until I hate it? And they're like, no, let's film it. Maybe change that one bit. And I'm like, okay. Like.
And so you're working on a new film for next year. Is it called Time Stalker? Is that the...
Yes.
See, it's Horny Time Traveller.
It kind of is, in a way. I've already stolen your idea, but she doesn't really go to... She can only go forward, because it's actually about reincarnation. Yeah. It's not about...
Not interested in that. I'm not interested. I just like time travel. I like criticising when time travel goes wrong. You can't get reincarnation wrong, can you?
Well, you can. This character does get it wrong.
Well, you know, yeah. Right, you can't get it wrong. What happens? So what? Give me a synopsis.
Well, I don't want to talk too much about it, but it's basically about a woman who keeps falling in love with the wrong person and keeps making the same mistake over and over with horrible consequences. So it's funny and dark, but in lots of different time periods, and just will be fun.
Yeah.
Like a romp, basically.
Terrific. And where does this darkness come from? Because you don't seem to talk to as a person who's there. I know a lot of people like love horror films, and is that where it comes from, or is it trying to?
Yeah, I think so. Probably. Yeah. I watched a lot of horror films. I always liked really dark fairy tales and stuff when I was a kid. I thought I had a really nice childhood, and I actually think when you have quite a nice childhood, you're quite attracted to dark stuff because it's testing. You're testing yourself. Seen and Heard. You must have done Seen and Heard.
Yeah.
So Seen and Heard is this brilliant thing where they get children to write sketches, and then adults perform them, and it is one of the most hilarious, brilliant, uplifting things that you can go and see. Scene spelled S-C-E-N-E. And I remember talking to one of the people who works on it, and I said, oh, this one was really dark. That one was quite scary. And she was like, oh, that's quite a nice middle-class child who did that one. And I was like, oh, and this one was really sweet and happy. And she was like, that child's quite troubled. And it's quite interesting because, like, she said, basically... The ones that have the more troubled backgrounds don't like horror at all. It's too scary.
Right, yeah.
And the ones that feel confident to dabble in it are the ones who are sort of quite well-adjusted and safe and stable and protected. And I think that's quite an interesting thing, actually, because I'm a big advocate of horror because I think it really helps us cathartically. And when I read a fairy tale where the ending has been made all safe and like down came a blackbird and pecked off her nose and then came Jenny Wren and put it back again. Yeah. I'm like, no, she didn't. She didn't put it back again. That's not the real ending. That's the sort of safe ending they've added to make it not scary for children.
It's interesting, because you really notice that with kids when you're reading, you know, Red Riding Hood. Mm. Now the grandma's just shut in a cupboard and it's fine, and she gets let out of the cupboard. That's no fun, is it?
No.
You want her to be eaten, that's the
it's
whole point.
It's ridiculous.
And
like,
then they can cut the wolf open and the grandma jumps out. That's okay. Yeah. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
But two people have had to be horrifically, well, a wolf and a person have had to be horrifically mutilated at some point.
But I mean, you've got to introduce them to bad things in the world at some point. Yeah. So that's the safe way of doing it. It's sort of tried and tested over hundreds of years. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, I just don't understand why, you know, you get these books that are like, Cindy wants to lend Eleanor her hairband for the ballet lesson. Oh, let's learn a lesson about that. And I'm like, oh, like, I hate those. I hate those.
Well, you say that, but the world has become a much nicer place recently, hasn't it, as a result of that stop. Maybe. That's one that's very interesting. Reincarnation, that's very exciting. Well, I'm very critical of time travel mistakes. I don't like sliding doors. I don't like Goodnight, Sweetheart.
Oh my God.
But I'm obsessed with them. But I don't like
Jesus.
Them. So I'll be watching this film with a keen eye.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of red herrings in it.
Are there?
Richard Herrings.
Yeah.
There's lots of Richard Herrings in it.
I'll take the part. Is there a man who goes to prostitutes? There's one of the men who goes to prostitutes. And nothing is quite like it seems when he cuts his penis off. That is what I'm good at. That's where I...
That's your
that's
niche.
That's my thing. That's my thing. Do you read reviews of your stuff?
Yeah, only retain the bad ones. Are you going to read a bad
I'm
one?
I'm not going to read it, but I just the thing I was going to talk to you about slightly was,
some bad ones
was Peter Bradshaw and The Guardian.
Yeah, he retracted.
I've never seen this in my life. He wrote you quite a sniffy review saying it wasn't as good as Ben Wheatley's other works.
Yes.
With Sightseers, and then saw it again. He went, oh no, I was wrong, it's good.
Yeah, after lots of people had said it was good. I mean, reviewers, they can only look back. They can't look forward. Yeah. That's why they're called reviewers. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. At the time, I remember I saw Peter Bradshaw after he wrote that review, and he was like, I think Ben Wheatley's a bit annoyed with me. And I was a bit like, oh my God, you watched my film, bless you. I was so happy I'd made a film and that I'd been in a film. And I just didn't give a fuck. I was like, someone from The Guardian came to see my film, you know. I was so happy. I didn't mind at all. And then when he rewrote it, I was like, oh, okay, correct. We got some bad reviews for Garth Marenghi as well at the time, where people didn't really get it. They didn't really see that it could what
it's
it was
weird because
you know?
I think that I've said this before, but I think nearly everything I like, the first time I saw an episode or the first time I saw it, I didn't get it and didn't like it. So I think something is good, it takes you a little while to tune in to.
And sometimes it could be close to home because it's something you like. You're like, because I just watched the first episode of Killing Eve and I'd built myself up so much that I was going to love it, and I was a bit disappointed, and I was a bit like, is it because it's not good, or is it just because it's quite close to what I like, you know, or what I might write? You know, I'm not near the godlike status of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but, you know, I did sort of go, oh, is it just because all of the twists feel quite obvious to me, but to other people they would not?
I do know what you mean. I actually thought the first two were brilliant. The third one was weird because the guy made some odd choices, and the twist was what was going to happen was just so obvious that you think, why did he do that? Right. And then later on, I think some of it's like,
It gets better and it gets worse.
I think it's definitely worth watching, but I can absolutely see what you. But what I like about it is the quirkiness of the characters. And they're really, you know, so they're real people, and the women
that.
Are real
I love,
people.
I love the writing of it. Actually, that's you know that quirkiness is what I like. Yeah. The fact that she's sort of stinking and getting out of bed and forgetting to have sex with her husband and stuff. I appreciate all of that. I think that's all brilliant. But I just wasn't as blown away by it as I was prepared to, but also you should never do that.
The problem is everyone tells you something's great and then it's built up too much.
Yeah. But then, you know, maybe that's the good thing about Sightseers. Someone gave it 3 stars and then lots of people went, it's much better than that.
Yeah.
You idiot.
That's what I'm hoping will happen with everything I've ever done. Eventually, someone will go, no, it wasn't shit.
If you want to look up an amazing 1-star review. Oh, there was a Sightseers review that said, Steve Oram and Alice Lowe, bit part television actors, managed to get in this film sort of thing. And that was quite amazing. But there was also a 1-star revenge review, which I read way, way after. Like, I read it quite recently. I was like, oh, what's this? I've not seen this one. Oh, my God. And actually, it sort of made me laugh, because by this stage, it doesn't matter. But, yeah, I love reading bad reviews, actually. Yeah. Sometimes it's more of a compliment to get a one star than it is to get a three, I think.
No, it's definitely worse.
It is, because it means
worse.
It provoked...
That's why it's two worse.
It means it provoked a reaction.
Two stars worse.
But it means
you've misunderstood
they had a strong
maths there,
guttural.
So it's much worse. But if I get five stars, it's better than three. And four stars.
But it means they had a strong reaction
to it. Well, no, it is. Well, you know, people aren't going to like everything you do. So, you know, that's... And that's...
This guy, can I say this one-star review? Not that I learn them off by heart, but I do, the bad ones. This guy said, I resented the enforced subjectivity. Which I was just like, isn't that all cinema? It's like, enforced subjectivity? Like, I made you feel what the character was feeling. I'm sorry that it was a woman. But, you know.
I think they should remake Prevenge with a man as the...
Okay, have that's you thought the remake. About that? That's the remake.
It's called Junior, isn't it? I'm just doing all of the Arnold Schwarzenegger film. What is the worst thing a cow has done to you? Would you say, in your opinion, in your
horse.
Subjective opinion?
I could say a horse.
Was that the question, though? That's what I mean. You might have an amazing horse. Okay, I'm going to allow the horse. I'll allow a horse.
I haven't got a cow story. Okay. When I was a little kid, I read this book called Millie Molly Mandy, and there was a story about a little girl, and there was a very specific thing about a little girl who went out with a basket on a picnic with all these little things in, like a little notebook and a little, you know, boiled egg and just like little things. And we were going out for a country walk, and my mum said, and I said, can I bring that basket? And I put all the same things that were in this, and I was really happy. And we went to a field and there was a horse, and my dad was like, oh, look at the horse. And it was massive. I was probably about six or something. Massive, this horse. And he was like, look at this horse. Isn't it lovely? And I was like, yes, it's lovely. And I just knew this horse meant evil, basically. I knew it meant ill towards me. And the horse declined its head like that. And I closed my eyes because I was so scared. This horse went like this. And it just took my basket and ran away with it.
Let's do that.
Took my basket.
They're sneaky horses. There's lots of horses around where I live, and I walk the dog at night time. They're very scary at night, horses.
Are they?
Yeah.
What do they
do? Well, they stand really still, but then they look at you. And then sometimes they really run around quite skittishly, and like, it's just you in a field with a horse right next to you.
They're big animals,
aren't
they?
They're big. They're beautiful, but they're terrifying.
Yeah.
And they're plotting something, and they're really... When you look at them up close, again, babies and horses prove that life is not real. A horse is not a real animal. When you look at its face, it's got whiskers. You know, a horse can use its back leg to scratch its ear. Have you ever seen that happen?
No.
I've seen it happen. Someone told me about it, and then it happened about 2 days later, and I've never seen it again.
Have you ever
seen... proof that this is a video game. That's the kind of thing that would happen.
Have
you ever seen a horse scratch his ear? No. Oh, it happened. Never happens again.
Is there a horse in your field with a basket?
There is.
In the night time, just holding a basket in its mouth.
It can't get it. It's just stuck. Oh, I wish I could get this fucking food out.
We didn't want to use this notepad and 50p, which was in there. An old 50p.
So, have you ever met Brian Blessed? I'll ask you this question, which I haven't asked since we've had him on.
Would I? No.
No.
I've seen him on stuff.
Have you?
Yeah.
What did you see him on?
Loose Women.
Oh, did you?
I don't know. Was he on Loose Women? I feel like he was on Loose Women. Just like...
I mean, he's been on everything. He's been on this. if he'll come on this. Have you been on Loose Women?
No. Do you know what? I probably will. Well, you know, I should try to because, you know, a lot of people watch it. You know, but I find it horrific. Right. I think it's horrific.
It is horrific.
But I'll go on it if anyone's out there that wants to put me on it. It's a lot of viewership.
Right. Okay, this is the question after Brian Blessed in the book. What is the scariest thing that has ever happened to you in a B&B? For reals.
Oh, for reals. I got a brilliant one.
Okay.
I shouldn't big it up too much.
Okay.
So when I was on tour with Garth Marenghi, and it was Richard Ayoade, Matt Holness, me, and Paul King, the writer and director of Paddington. He actually used to drive us round. He was our director, and yep. he used to drive us round in a car to different venues. And we were doing a tour, and like Matt and Richard were like, oh, we don't want to do a tour. We hate tours. We're really miserable about stuff. And and so Paul was like, I'll book us some really nice B&Bs. And he did. He booked us some really nice B&Bs, but one of them was by the seaside. And it was this man with a comb over. He was literally like a League of Gentlemen character. He had a comb over and lots of those little figurines everywhere, yeah, dusty common, yeah. figurines and, you know, plastic flowers. And in the morning, I woke up like bolt upright with the loudest panpipe synthesizer music that I have ever heard. It was about 6 in the morning and we came downstairs and this man was just belting out this stuff. And we sat down for breakfast, sort of shell-shocked, and he was like, this is me. I play all of this on my Casio keyboard. And here is the CD, if you would like to buy it. This is Autumn Moods. And, and he was like, I've got no musical training. I just make it up myself. And it was stuff like, a spoonful of sugar. But all with, like, just synthesizer on a Casio.
Did you buy the CD?
No.
You definitely should have, and then just listened to it over and over again in the tour bus.
It was creepy as hell. Yeah. It was really creepy because I was like, what is he doing? He was like he's trying to get us out in retrospect. Wanted us out.
I think he was trying to get on, you know, get in with him. He could have I can come on tour, I could come on in the interval, play my songs.
No.
That would work with Garth Marenghi.
No, it was one of the weirdest experiences, I have to say.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
I knew there'd be a good run. Well, look, what's coming up that you can talk about? Anything good or is it all secret?
So, London Film Festival is showing Sometimes, Always, Never, which is a film starring Bill Nighy, a script by Frank Cottrell Boyce. That was a lot of fun to film. I've just filmed a film with Simon Bird from The Inbetweeners. It's his directorial debut. It's called The Days of Bagnold Summer. And what else? Oh, and I just filmed something with Craig Roberts, who was in Submarine.
Okay.
And he has directed a feature film, and it's Sally Hawkins and Billy Piper and David Hewlis and me.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good.
So I've had a good summer, and all of those are coming out at various... But you can see Sometimes, always Never quite soon.
Cool.
So in October.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it. Is the beer nice? Beer 52?
I've had a lovely time. It's actually very nice, this pale ale.
I've drunk my whole one.
I'm very slow.
Oh, no, I haven't. I've still got a little bit left. Just it feels like it's... I'm very drunk, is what I'm saying.
What time is it? Is it like midnight?
Yeah, we've actually travelled back in time. It's gone on so long. We've gone all the way around past time.
Tudor people in the audience.
They're very impressed by this bottle of beer. I don't know how much of that you at home are going to hear, but we had a nice time here. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Alice Long!
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have been listening to Richard Tang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Tang, and my guest Alice Lowe. The music, as always, is by Pest. Thank you very much to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, everyone at gofasterstrike.com, especially Chris Evans, not that one, or that one who's not Captain America anymore. Thanks very much also to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre.com. I would like to especially thank our executive producer this week, Hugh Lind Evans. Oh, yeah, I'm from Wales, I expect. And I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. This is a Fuzz, GoFasterStrike.com and Sky Potato production. Thank you for listening. You can watch it on YouTube as well, you know. Buy my book. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.